Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 31st, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, for which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. And we're reading in the Gospel of John. We read chapter 10 last week, so we're going to pick up and read chapter 11. It's being read by Alexander Scorby. John, Gospel of John, chapter 11.
Chapter 11. Now a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard therefore that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that saith he to his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us also go, that we may die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way, and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then which were with her in the house, and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit,
and was troubled, and said, Where have ye laid him? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, Take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, Loose him, and let him go. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary, and had seen the things which Jesus did, believed on him. But some of them went their ways to the Pharisees, and told them what things Jesus had done. Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council, and said, What do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. And one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, Ye know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. Then from that day forth they took counsel together for to put him to death. Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence unto a country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus, and spake among themselves as they stood in the temple, What think ye, that he will not come to the feast? Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given a commandment that if any man knew where he were, he should show it, that they might take him.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements?
Yes, we have several questions tonight, John.
Okay.
The first one is really a question on whether a writ coronto is appropriate. And this person says, I have seen a coronto for those not qualified to hold office because they did not have the credentials. However, what about for those not duly elected? Or those where it cannot be determined that they were duly elected, then is the coronto the correct vehicle? Now, they list three different cases here. The first is for maladministration through the 2020 elections. Pre, during, and post on many levels due to violation of statutes, laws, policies, and procedures at both the state and federal level. Including but not limited to the violation of the Constitution of Virginia, Article 1, Section 3, government instituted for the common benefit, against the danger of maladministration. The second thing is violation by neglecting to use Code of Virginia availability to remedy known expiration of certification and security vulnerabilities of election machines prior to the 2020 elections. Factual evidence shows ample time was available to address the issues. Evidence includes commissioners' documented knowledge of non-certification and security vulnerabilities in advance of the 2020 election cycle, and notice of violations by Judicial Watch regarding voter rolls. Code of Virginia, Section 24.2-103F. The State Board may petition a Circuit Court or Supreme Court, whichever is appropriate, for a writ of mandamus or prohibition or other available legal relief for the purpose of ensuring that elections are conducted as provided by law. And the last one is testing of Virginia voting systems was insufficient and inadequate, with no assessment of source code and other aspects by which fraud could occur as required by federal law and the Code of Virginia, titled Section 24.2-629C and D. Whether the system can be safely used without undue potential for fraud. We can find no one at the state level who knows anything about source code testing or source code, or who tests thoroughly enough to troubleshoot the potential for fraud activity. So the question is a quo warranto the proper vehicle to address these three things?
Well, yeah, the quo warranto would be appropriate. The main problem, of course, is that they're not going to listen. They're going to ignore it. The courts will ignore it. It has to be applied in the courts, and the courts will ignore it. We did file a quo warranto. That was one of the first papers that we had filed against the judiciary and also the legislature on a federal level. And we didn't necessarily anticipate that they would acknowledge it or that it would do anything. But it is filed for the purpose of preserving it for when we get to the other side. So if someone was to file a quo warranto for that purpose, and ultimately, that agency or government needs to shut down, and because they had violated their oaths. We read, for instance, in the Declaration of Independence, which is the principal thing that National Liberty Alliance ultimately is doing, and I'm going to read that to you, where we read in the Declaration, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, or, shall I say, new servants. And that's our intention. But I don't believe that we're the only ones with the intentions of removing these people and instituting new servants. The government structure that is existing right now and most of the agencies are constitutional, and they're still there. The problem is it's being run by criminals, and they have taken control of things, and they are just doing criminal activities. And of course, that is the major problem here. But I do believe that, there is a movement behind the scenes. If anybody's been paying attention to what Trump has been saying the last week or two, concerning the fact that something needs to be done. That's exactly what he said. Something needs to be done. And it needs to be done now, he said. We can't wait to 2022. But as we watch, we see the counting of the votes. And again, I don't know how much people are aware of this, depending on what news you're watching. If you're watching mainstream, you're not going to hear any of this. If you're looking into alternative news and particular places, you'll find a lot of information concerning what's going on sort of behind the scenes or what's happening actually in the open, but just isn't being reported. And Trump said that he believes that there are nine states that are in question, and he believes that that he had won all those nine states. I don't know if he exactly said that himself, but others have. But he did say that there are nine states in question. And two of the states have already pretty much been won, even though they're still going through doing things. So once that takes place, all of these nine states and all of this information is revealed, we should hope and we should imagine that the people are going to demand the removal of this imposter in the presidency. And of course, the true president should be reinstated. And I agree with some people out there that are saying that he's still, you know, Trump still is president. And he's still working as president behind the scenes. And I do believe that that is the case. And I also do believe that the military at some point, the military is the only thing that can save us. Military is the only thing that can bring this nation back where it belongs. But then it's up to the people. It's up to the people to take control of that. And, of course, that's our plan, is to teach people to take control. And we, too, should get busy starting to remove people. And we need to be starting to do this at the grassroots level. And that means that we have to get these committees of safety going at the grassroots level, get people involved, resurrect the elected committee men, take control of our courts, rebuild the militia, and get people active within our counties, and then start taking our government back. And if necessary at that point in time, then filing quo warrantos to literally shut them down and revote people back into office and bring us back under the Constitution again. And that could be accomplished, of course, once we have just courts. And until we have just courts, nothing, none of this could be accomplished. So if someone has a plan to lay this out, particularly upon their state with a quo warranto, and lay all the information and file it into the courts, and you probably would need to also find a place that you can file it sort of as a record, like we have done here. We're filing all our papers as sort of a depository up in Northern District. And we've opened up two cases, one for the purpose of as a depository of a record of the paperwork, and the other one as a common law court. Now, of course, we're not going to get justice, and we're not getting justice. But we will get justice eventually. I do believe that. So, anyway, next question.
Okay. If members of NLA witness crimes committed and perfected by a judge based on his admissions to treason in open court, it appears to me that the member should file an affidavit in court, in that case, as to the treasonous acts committed by the judge into the case at 18 U.S.C. Section 4, misprison of felony. Do you agree?
Well, yes. You could, you know, well, look, at you can also pursue an indictment. We would hear, you know, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury would hear for a potential indictment against that judge. And what would be required for that is for people who have witnessed this to write affidavits, being very clear on specifically the charges and what took place. And then we would call together a grand jury, and they would then take a look at the evidence in affidavit forms. And any court records also, maybe any recordings or of the hearings or things of that nature. And then we can consider an indictment. All right, next question.
Have any of the constituted 3,133 counties had success in having indictments, true bills, and or no bills, or in issuing them? If so, do they have a template they can share with others?
Well, we have plenty of indictments. We have over 200 judges indicted. Of course, they're not acted upon because they control the courts. And sheriffs and marshals, they obey the courts. They're not educated enough to understand what their powers and authorities are. Although there are some sheriffs who are beginning to understand that. But they, too, are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place to some degree. Until they get enough sheriffs working together in a particular area so that they can really protect each other, because one or two sheriffs can't go up against these people. And they have way too much power, and they control the courts. But again, if you have enough sheriffs working with that, and that's part of what we're looking to do, is to train up our sheriffs the way that they should really be operating their sheriff's offices, their office of sheriff. And of course, we've got the campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Everybody should be considering buying a book, Government by Consent, for their sheriff. This book here would open their eyes to all of a good understanding, of course, of everything, the way things should be, the way the courts should run, their powers, their authority. There's a large chapter in their own sheriffs and information for them specifically. But the whole book, of course, really, you know, covers things for everybody. The whole book is for all of us. So that's one of the things that we really do need to do. And so anybody interested in purchasing a book for the sheriff, you can click on Government by Consent book on the right-hand side of a website. You can see the browser open to that right now here. And then fill out the form, and we will send a book to the sheriff directly with a letter from another sheriff, sheriff to sheriff, on an introduction. Meanwhile, people should be building committees of safety within their county. And it takes maybe about three meetings. It could take 3 months or 3 weeks, depending on how often you do the meetings. And I would really strongly suggest to try to do a weekly meeting for the first month, so you can accomplish all the necessary business at hand and then be able to approach the sheriff. On our website, and we've spoken about this in the past, but you can go under People's Duty and highlight Committees of Safety and learn how to start a Committee of Safety in your county. But when that Committee of Safety comes together for the first time, again, it's going to take about three meetings to do this. You have to create a charter. We do have information exactly how to create a charter, and we've got a framework for a charter. Everyone should really try to work with that framework and build upon that framework. Each county is unique and different and have different problems and situations throughout the United States. So we all have to add to our different information on that charter. We also have to do a resolution. We have to make sure that our sheriffs are primed with knowledge, so getting them a copy of the book, The Government by Consent. So once they're primed with that knowledge and you work 3 or 4 weeks to get this Committee of Safety up and going and established and put together all the necessary paperwork that we lay out here under the Committee of Safety tab, and put together a nice booklet. We talk about that. You can put together a booklet so they have a copy of your charter, your resolution. And so they come to an understanding of exactly who you are and what you're doing and what your intentions are. And then you get the sheriff to come to your meeting. You invite him to the meeting, and then you ask that that sheriff or one of his deputies should attend each of our meetings, as many deputies as one would want to come anyway. But at least one sheriff or one deputy should come to the meetings every month at that point. And then start taking care of the business at hand, start straightening out the governments. You know, last week was a good call. We discussed a lot of this. So anybody wants to get more detail on this, you should go back and listen to last week's program, because we got into a lot of detail on this issue. So I don't want to, restate all of that again. People can go back and listen. Okay, next question.
That's all the questions, John. I guess I would have one announcement, and that is the Red Pill Expo is on this coming weekend, June 5th and 6th. It's in Rapid City, South Dakota. They have a great list of speakers. Anybody that's interested can go to redpillexpo.org and see a complete rundown on the speaker list, and there are some shorts on the talks that various speakers are giving that you can listen to. If you can't make the Red Pill Expo, you can sign up for a modest amount of money to run it live. as it'll be sent out. And I think they have like a week or two or three after the expo. You can still download the various talks. They have some really great speakers. I would encourage everybody to go if they can. If they can't, just live stream it, download it, listen to it. If you're planning to go, it may be too late, but if you're planning to go at the last minute, please send me an email so that we can determine how many people from NLA are going and see if we can get enough together to get a table there. It's a great place to meet people and to have our message put out to the public. And that's all I have for tonight, John.
Okay, thank you. For those who haven't heard, I should hope everyone has heard this already, but again, depending on what news and where you get your news from, President Trump is preparing rallies now, and right now I'm not sure exactly where the first one's going to be, but it's in process of being planned as we speak, and they do expect a large response to those rallies. And of course, we can imagine that he's going to be focusing in on the call to corruption in the past election, and particularly, of course, in the battleground states. And, I believe there were 9 states that, again, is believed that Trump has won, which brings him well over 400 electoral votes. And so that's kind of interesting, and things are starting to move. And once that information starts to roll out, I think the pressure is going to be on, and there's going to be a lot of other things that are going to be revealed other than the fraud on the election. So we'll see what goes on. Okay, is Brent here? I guess not. Gerard, are you here? I see Gerard's in tonight. You want to take the mic in a few? All right. All right, well, before we get started, we only have one person in the queue, by the way, so anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1 to get into that queue. And so if anybody has any questions or any comments, star 6 and a 1. Hey, Gerard, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
And I'll pass the mic over to you in a minute. I just want to make a note about the book. I did this week on Friday, they sent me the final corrections in the book. And all the corrections were made. There were 2 minor corrections that needed to be made, and you know, it was very, very simple things, like too much space in one area and some other silly thing. So I signed off on it on Sunday. I went through it. I received it on Friday, and I went through it on Sunday, and I signed off on Sunday, and I mailed it out on Sunday night. So that's through, and put a note out there that, look, at we need to get this to print like now, ASAP. So I'm hoping, I expect to hear from them tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday. Obviously, today no one was working because of the holiday memorial. So I'm expecting to hear from them tomorrow, and if not, I'll be calling them and pushing them to try to get a date on exactly when this thing's going to go to print and start pushing books out. So things are very, very close. So anyway, just wanted to make that announcement. One more call for Brent, if Brent is here. And if not, you want to keep an eye out for Brent, Jan?
Will do.
Okay. All right, I'm going to pass things over to Gerard. Gerard, you got the board. And again, there's still nobody in the queue. There's only one person in the queue. So anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1. Questions or comments? Okay, Gerard, first caller.
Okay. We got Kevin from New York. Go ahead, Kevin.
Can you hear me?
I can. You're blasting me out.
Okay, great. Yeah, the question was answered before I asked it. John was on it, still waiting for the book, and I'm glad to hear it should be coming soon. That's pretty much all I've got. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, that was easy.
Yeah, they told me that last time I spoke with them, they said within 3 weeks from the time I sign off. But I'm going to push them harder. I think they could do it quicker than that to sort of get me into their queue for print. We've been waiting long enough, and they've dragged their feet for a very, very long time. But and some of these errors that were corrected, they had to be corrected again. Some of them didn't get corrected, and we just kept going back with them. But finally, we did get everything straightened out. Okay, back to you, Jerron.
Okay.
And again, star 6 to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1.
Oh, I didn't prepare anything. I didn't know I would be front.
Well, you got John there still. You got one other person here.
Okay. Hang on, let me get my... Okay, John, from Michigan. Yes.
This is John from Michigan.
Yep. What's up, John?
Well, I work for you guys, and we put together writ of habeas corpus, 8 months ago. And I'm just wondering how we perfect that. What has to be done to perfect that to get them to hear that writ? I mean, as far as I know, all the affidavit has been served, and they didn't respond. So there should be a.
Well, there's follow up paperwork to have been done. Have you made contact with Jim and gone through the second? There's like 3 different processes that we go through, and then the final one, if that judge does not, it totally ignores it all the way through, which most of them are, because most of them are on the federal level, no
right,
less.
Right.
But in any event, they totally ignore it after the third process that we go through. Then we go through an indictment, and we've already come together for potential indictments on judges that refuse to honor their oaths and obey the law by exercising their authority and their duty for habeas corpus and a few other things. So any judge who fails in that process. Again, we have a 3-part process. Anybody who fails all the way through, then it's an automatic indictment. So that has already been considered and agreed upon by the grand jury. So talk to Jim. Make sure everything has... Did you do the filing?
No, Jim did the filing, and we got the notice of default. They didn't respond. And I know we sent in the first affidavit, the notice of default, and then it's what he was saying. He says, my understanding was they were supposed to send in one every 30 days for a total of 3 over 90 days. At that point in time, they had received notice. And then that's my question is...
Yeah, no, there was a third paper we filed. I forget what we called it. Jim handles that paper. And that third paper is really the final warning to the judge to obey the law. And then after that, then we just do the indictment. Now, even though we filed the indictment in numerous places, we continue now even to file it with the Attorney General, and we send a copy to Trump, and we file it in our depository for the court up in Albany. And when we get to the other side, then we intend on pursuing those indictments and pursuing. You know, a lot of these judges may already have been indicted, and a lot of them may be in jail by the time we get to the other side. But in any event, if not, then we'll see what we can do about that.
Right. In the meantime, a guy's been in jail for 18 years for something he didn't do, and it's crazy, you know. So he's suffering. His mother's really getting old, and I'm just... I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what else to do. So,
yeah. Well, I know that. Look, this is we're dealing with evil, and nothing short of it, evil, and evil's got control of our government. Evil's got control of our federal judiciary and our state judiciary. They got control of the entire court. You know, the minions of the New World Order have destroyed our republic, and this goes all the way back to 1776. And then an agreement with the Pope and the King back in 1818, and that was the purpose, of course, that caused the 13th Amendment to be written to prevent these bar attorneys from having any any access into our government or any participation or holding any office of honor. And these people have continued through the bar, the British bar, up until, goodness, the last, I think it was 1870s, somewhere in 70. I think it was 1870-something. I know it was after the Organic Act of 1871 when the American Bar Association came into being. And that was just an extension of the original bar. The purpose of the bar, attorneys, is to destroy particularly republics and of course, even destroy democracies and move them over into oligarchies and prepare the world for the New World Order. That's their purpose. And this has been a plan that's been well over a couple of hundred years, and even before 1776. I'm not sure exactly how far back the British bar goes, but when that original creation of the British bar was the beginning of putting together the minions for the destruction. They've destroyed our economy. They've destroyed our republic. They've destroyed our judiciary. They've destroyed our law. They've destroyed our government and completely at every level. They got their hands into our medical, into the pharmaceuticals, and they got their hands into everything. Anywhere you go, you bump into a lawyer. There's over 80,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C. alone, and that tells us who's running the country. We do need lawyers. We do need lawyers that are trained in equity, in the case of the federal level, which would be, the USCs, the U.S. titles. And of course, on the state level, there's also equity. A couple of things that they got in there was, for instance, in the federal level, around 1970, they pressed forward with, moving USC 18, Title 18, into criminal law to be able to apply civil law upon the people and criminal law, using their civil law to go after people criminally. And that went all the way down into the states. The states were already working on that, and so that they had already accomplished that on the state level because they already had activities going. I know here in New York, for instance, it was around 1913 or somewhere around, oh, wait a second, I think it was 1909. Remember when we went up to Albany to the archives, Gerard? Wasn't that the law had changed from 1909 to 1911? And in 1911, the law, which was the equity, had grown and swollen like four times the size of what it was before. And all of this was really law for civil law to control the people. I think that was about
that.
Yeah,
1909
time.
Was the last good one. And then 1911, it was forget about it.
Yeah, I think that was the years, too. Yeah. So anyway, they have destroyed everything we have done. Now, we need to resurrect it. We need to bring it back, and it requires the people to become educated. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And, of course, there was Thomas Jefferson that said that. So if people are going to remain ignorant and continue in their ignorance, then they cannot have liberty. Liberty requires activity and involvement. Liberty requires government by consent by us. That means we must be active, we must have knowledge, we must understand these things, and we must exercise our rights and our authority as the lawmaker, because we are the sovereign, we are the lawmaker. After all, in a court of law, under common law, it's the jury that decides the law. They got the jury nullification. They don't like a law, they get rid of it. And they see what took place. They'll whatever they think is right. They will just state it and make it happen. Of course, things aren't running that way, but that's the way it's supposed to be. The people decide. Equity is not to be applied inside or any kind of civil law. Equity is not to be applied in a court of law, particularly against the people. Now, of course, someone violates USC 18, for instance, is really written for the people And it talks about criminal penalties and different things, what would be a crime, and but it's all focused in on the agents and the agencies to control them, to lay out certain penalties for things that they have done. But even when they're tried, they cannot be tried if an agent working for some agency is indicted. And they're going to face go into court. They cannot be heard in an equity court at that point. They have to be removed into a court of justice because a criminal application is be applied upon them. So when they have to go into a court of law, and the jury decides, and the jury may look at the law and not like it and nullify it. They may look at the law and think it's not harsh enough on the individual and make a greater penalty. But the whole focus is always on restitution, to make this person get involved and restore the damage, whatever that damage might be, that needs to be done, if that's possible. And, of course, many things that take place under the agents and within agencies, there's really no direct victim other than the fact that they violated their oaths and they abused their powers and authorities and maybe committing fraud and whatever is involved, all that stuff. But, there is really no direct individual. For every injury, there must be a remedy. And for every, what was the other one? In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. But these are cases where, of course, the injured party is the people as a whole. So that does apply there. But anyway, we have to know the law. The people have to get involved, and we have to get involved on the grassroots level within our counties. We have to create committees of safety. There is no way that this nation will be saved and maintained. Trump might do his work, and the military might do their work, of course, because that's what's really going to be required to bring things back to order. But if the people don't step up, they're not maintain it, we don't have it, and we can't have it. We have to maintain it. So we have to get involved. And there's only one way this can happen. And that, clearly, our founding fathers showed us by example, by creating this nation with committees of safety. We never should have disbanded the committees of safety. Clearly, looking back, they should have been maintained, along with the committee men, which they morphed into the committee men, but they really both should have been continued. Or even at least the committeemen should have been more active as a committee of safety, as committeemen. But there are people that may not become committeemen that should be part of the committee of safety because it's necessary. The militia is part of the committee of safety. The judiciary as far as, people involved with, taking control to orient the juries. And of course the committee men and other activities, everybody needs to be active and working with the sheriff and working with local government. Local government should be coming to your committees of safety. All the towns should be visited. All the cities within the county should be visited. And the message should be brought to them, the resolution. We've got this under the people's duty. I just mentioned it, the charter, the resolution, with the sheriff working with you and putting together a nice package, sort of a book that you can put together nice and neat with all this information, who we are, what we're doing, what our intentions are, and what we expect of our government. And we expect their obedience. And if they're not going to be obedient, we're going to do everything we can and will take them out of power because we will have the committeemen in process and in power. We'll also have just the people in general and also the courts, which we will force them to either obey and keep their oaths or leave their positions, resign, or we'll remove them. Either we can remove them politically by recall or if it's a serious situation, we can indict them. And then within 90 days have a special election to fill that position. Some positions, they have a plan for when a vacancy takes place, which governor can, appoint certain people for certain positions. But most need really a special election for that, to bring someone back into that seat, that power, that authority. But if we're not going to get involved and do these things, then there is no liberty. Liberty requires work and sacrifice.
Well, I'm working with Bob Overhill up here in Michigan, and we had a Committee of Safety organizational meeting for about 10 counties down in southern Michigan. But one of the guys that showed up was talking about a lady up in Houghton, Michigan, which is way up near the peninsula. And I really, 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 I talked to her, and I want her to interview with you. Probably put it on this thing if we can set it up. But you should listen to her. She has her own committee of safety, but it's totally independent of anything you've said. But in 6 months, it's grown to 800 people up there, about six counties, and they're doing exactly what you're talking about up there in Upper Peninsula.
It's
unbelievable. Yeah. As I said, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just got to do what she's doing up there. But it's uncanny. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking, this is a small counties up there, and they've got over 800 people on their mailing list from five or six counties up there.
That's good, and hopefully they're doing resolutions, and they're doing a charter, and they're working with the sheriff, and they're approaching them in a proper way, and they're educating themselves and the people. Because if they're not educated, that turns into a star chamber.
Right. Well, this is
this lady
is sharp, and I would like her to have. I'm trying to get Bob to set it up where she can at least call you and talk to you.
Sure.
And I've talked to her about this thing, but I mean, it's something that everything we're trying to do, they're doing in spades up there, and they're already getting it done, and they're influencing the county sheriffs and everything up there. So I'm just mentioning that first to give people some hope and that something is happening. But we're working hard for the communities of safety down here in southern Michigan, and. We got a crazy governor over here. So.
Well, yeah, I'd love to talk with her and see how things are going and how they brought things together and if they're not working with a framework that we're working with, of course I'm going to try to convince them to do that so that we're kind of interchangeable. You know, that if you're working in one county and someone else is in another county and later somewhere else in the state or even the state next door, we're all structured the same way. It's extremely important that we structure ourselves in the same way. And once we do that, there's lots of, things that are unique to a county that people have to address and do whatever they have to do to work their business out. But let's take a situation with Agenda 21. We all have to deal with that in every county. So we need to be able to work together, county to county, state to state, to deal with Agenda 21 and numerous other problems that are a national problem to get rid of. But and once that's settled up, then it's mostly really, like that old saying, all politics is local. Get control of your local politics from the county level all the way down into the village level. Get control of all of that. And if every county is doing that, people in every county are doing that, guess what? You just took control of the state, because they're doing the same thing, getting control of local government. Together, collectively, you control the state. And if every state is doing this and every county and every state is doing this, guess what? We just took control of the federal government. And this is the only way we can do it. Our founding fathers worked together, and they were uniform in the things that they were doing, and they were all doing the same things, but they also all had their own unique problems, so that they had to, each county had their own unique problems that they had to work out. But they also had the problems that were collective, that worked upon us all. So let us hope and convince those that are doing these things that they don't just go off and kind of recreate the wheel, so to speak, and do things differently that is not compatible with others. And also, the educational part. Let me tell you something. Very simply, if people are not educated and do not understand the process of the way who we are as a people, what we are, what our republic is, and how we are one nation under God, and numerous other things, as far as understanding who we are as a people and our founding documents and common law, if they don't understand those things and they're trying to make corrections, they can turn into a star chamber very, very quickly. I had someone give me a call. They had a huge number of people. They wanted to do things. They wanted to do some indictments and stuff, and they wanted me to tell them how to structure things and everything. And I started to educate the person, And they stopped me. They didn't have time for the education. They said, no, 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 we just want to know. And I'm not going to help someone to become a star chamber if they're not going to become educated, if they're not going to become, just generally educated and understand the processes of our nation and who we are as a republic. If they're not going to do that, then I'm not going to assist them into getting out there and to just do indictments haphazardly in the case, because that's particularly what they were interested in, is doing some indictments, so they wanted to create grand juries. We have to be very careful what we're doing, and we need to correct each other when we see someone going astray. And again, we speak about this in the plans that we put together. And again, we have handbooks under People's Duty. You come down, you click on handbooks all the way down on the bottom of that tab. If anybody's looking at their browser, I'm sharing my browser to show it. You know, we have all these handbooks. We have the Committee of Safety Handbook, great specific details on exactly how to do what needs to be done, you know, creating all the necessary things. We have a copy of the Committee of Safety Resolution here, the copy of the Committee of Safety Vow. And everybody needs to take that vow, okay? And we have to hold each other's feet to the fire concerning that vow. We have to come with a sense of honor, with a sense of justice and mercy. And if we fail with that, then again, we're going to become a star chamber. We're going to be just as bad as the people we're trying to deal with. We've got a committee man handbook, great detail, everything, information on how things work. We have the jurist handbook. We have a jurist questionnaire. We have the militia codes, rules, and resolutions. Again, part of the thing. These are all subcommittees that need to be created within the committees of safety because we have to rebuild our militia. We have the sheriff's handbook. And then, of course, we have the copy of the charter and the resolution in Microsoft Word, so it's a lot easier to, you know, manipulate and add to and make changes that you think are necessary to the charter and the resolutions and make a lot of things that you want to add to it. So we have all of the things necessary for people to do. You know, I remember a while back talking to people about doing some of these things, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know what to do. So I had to do research on it and bring it all together, we've put it together. We've got instructions on everything, on how to do it. So anyway, but yeah, I'd like to talk with that individual. And by the way, we only have one other person in the queue, so star 6 and a 1 to get in. But go ahead, John. Back to you, Gerard.
I'll talk to Bob, and I know I talked to him about getting her in touch with you, but I did talk to her. I talked to her about this call-in. I've taken all the constitutional courses. I've taken the ethics course. I've taken all this stuff. Very, very good. I got to admit that. And I knew a lot before I started. At least I thought I did. But this lady, she's very cognizant of what we're talking about. And I told her to listen in on this thing. Hopefully, maybe she is, and she'll call in. But be fascinated. You'd be fascinated what they've accomplished up there. They're working with the sheriff up there. They're doing everything that we're talking about, totally independent of us. And I says, you ought to, we've done a lot of groundwork up here. You ought to jump in with us on this thing. But maybe, you know, I it's hard to argue with somebody.
Well, what state was that in?
Michigan, Upper Peninsula, Michigan.
Michigan. Were they Michigan was closed down too, right?
Oh yeah, I tried for 3 months to get a venue to get this meeting together, and everybody was shut down. They wouldn't do it. It was crazy. I mean, this governor up here is nuts. We're putting
because I've been trying to get meetings going in my county, and we haven't been able to get a venue because of all this craziness. But now that the things have been lifted, I'm going to try to get a venue going and get something going in my county and the counties next door. We'll invite them over. But I'm also planning on touring the state. I'm thinking of maybe finding 4 or 5 locations across the state and invite counties that are close to those locations to come together so that we can get the entire state going. And those people, others that are doing this in their state, getting the Committee of Safety, hopefully you'll get some active people that'll take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and try to organize the entire state by visiting other counties and getting them, you know, active. You know, and anybody who signs up for the Committees of Safety to create one on our website, you'll get access to the membership of all the people within your county that's, our members. You'll get their phone numbers. We won't give out emails because we don't want people to come in here and start spamming people. But you'll get their first name, their counties, and their phone numbers. And you can start making calls to the people in your county and the counties next door, get them together in your first meeting, encourage them to get the committees of safety going in their counties, and hopefully someone will pick up, and start visiting other counties across their state. So let's get active, everybody. Let's do what we got to do and get our sheriffs on board, too.
If she's working with her sheriff and he's claiming to be constitutional, we should contact him. Because even the sheriffs that think they're constitutional, they're really not. They're into the corporate.
Are they connected with Sheriff Darr?
No, they're not. Sheriff Darr is right here in Berry County. He's just north of me.
But is that those sheriffs in those counties connected with him? Because they should be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. I'm not sure who the sheriff is, and I got to talk to Darr about that. But Darr's a good man. I met with him many, many times, personal friend of his, and we need more sheriffs like Sheriff Darr. But that's I'm just saying that this lady up there, they put a bunch of pressure on the sheriff. They changed a bunch of things, and they won't enforce the laws up there as far as masks and stuff. So, I mean, that was something that these people accomplished on their own up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing exactly what you're talking about. And I got to talk to Darr and find out exactly who it is up there, but I'm sure he knows him. He knows pretty much most of the sheriffs in the state here. So.
Okay, appreciate
things
it.
Things are moving. We're in the Soviet Socialist Republic of Michigan up here. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, things are freeing up, but they're not going to be free for long. I'll give you the rest of the story later.
Yeah.
We really got to be on the ball to fight this whole pandemic thing, because they're gonna lock us down again. I can guarantee you that. They're putting their plan in place as we speak.
Well, half the people are sheep and half the people are pissed as hell. Okay, excuse my French. I mean, you know how many tough people I talk to. I'm not wearing a mask. I go into the stores, and of course I got a medical condition. I can't wear a mask. I require oxygen to live. Okay, so, but you know, normally when you start talking about that, I think people get some hope that actually somebody would actually defy these idiots. We need a big mask burning party down here, but that's my thought on the thing. You know, and this is not about violence. It's not about black or white or Republican or Democrat. It's about standing up for what is right. You know, I mean, this is crazy what's going on up here.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But people are afraid, and they use the fear to control them, and that's what happens.
I refuse to live in fear. An attitude is an attitude, and I choose to have a good attitude and be happy. So I don't care what anybody else does. So.
But all right. Anyway,
thank you. Yeah.
We appreciate it, and we should get in touch with. We should at least get Robert to get in touch with the sheriff and find out what's actually going on. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. Even the oaths of office they have, they don't have bonds and they don't have oaths, so they're all operating, you know, unlawfully, and they need to fix that. So
in
if you're going to be
In Michigan, there's an actual law. There's a law that everybody that works for the government has to take an oath of office. Okay, they have to do that. That's a Michigan law. And
right.
And that's what I was telling the people at that meeting we had the other night. I says that might be so, but how many people have actually read the Constitution or taken an oath to support something they've never read? They have no idea what's in it.
Right. Right. And the other thing is they're supposed to have a bond.
Right.
And if they're operating without a bond, then they're operating outside of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And this business that they're covered under the state is baloney. That is not acceptable. You know, that the state, that there is no bond, but the state's going to underwrite them. That is not a bond that will keep your elected official under the Constitution. You know what I mean? It doesn't. In other words, he's supposed to put that money up for that bond for himself personally. Because when he does something outside the Constitution, he's personally liable. And to say that the taxpayers are going to cover that defeats the purpose of the bond.
Right, right.
You know,
we're bonding ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, things are moving. Things are moving in Michigan. There's a lot of people mad as heck up here. And there's a lot of sheeple up here. There's a whole bunch of sheeple.
Yeah.
Probably find that, I guess, depending on the size of the city and stuff like that. But up in the Upper Peninsula, I mean, that's a whole other state up there almost it is. And there's a bunch of free people up there, I'll tell you that. And there's a bunch of free people down here in the southern part of the state, too. It's a big state. So.
Well, we need leaders, too. You know, if somebody proclaims it, you'd be surprised how fast people are that are on board with this mask. Well, not all of them are on board. They just do it to get by, go along to get along.
Right, right.
So if they hear somebody actually proclaiming it, then they get brave, you know.
Well, but it's it has to go back with the sheriff. Sheriff Dyer won't even enforce those mask laws up there, okay? So, but I mean, I know we're still fighting. They shut down. They fined some restaurants up here for having no masks. And this was back 3, 4, 5 months ago. You know, the state comes in. They took the court, the governor to court, and the Supreme Court in the state of Michigan declared that the law she was relying on were unconstitutional. And so she said, well, she's wanted to, she just told the county health department, said they should enforce laws. They says, you can't enforce something, you can't give somebody authority to enforce something you don't have authority to enforce. Get out of here. Go back to your hole. I mean, wherever you're coming from, you know, hobbit. But it's nuts. People, they just go along to get along. I've told many people about the government by consent course. I mean, I never consented. To heck with them. I refuse to go along. I refuse to get a shot, and I refuse to wear a mask. So the heck with them. So
yeah,
that's my soapbox. I'll get off it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, we got it. We got a lot of work to do, and it's gonna get worse before it gets better. I hate to tell you. So it's very important that we stick together, and we do our local stuff. Look at George Soros puts money down in the counties. Why do you think he does that? He spent $2.5 million in Maricopa County to put that sheriff in. There's a reason he did that, because he knows how powerful that office is, and he needs to control that sheriff. And that's why they had so much trouble with the audit, because the sheriff wasn't doing his job. You know, he could put an end to that stuff right away, but he was owned. You know, he took money from Soros, and so that's what you get. So, you know, they're down right into the county and the town levels. They've been concentrating their money because they know that, you know, they understand that all politics starts at a local level. And so they've been, the past 6-7 years, they've been concentrating on the local offices as well as everything they've done on the top level with the Congress and the Senate and all the shenanigans that are going on up there. So we got our work cut out for us.
Where's it going to end? That's my question. Where's it going
to
end?
I don't expound
violence. I'm afraid a lot of people, innocent people, are going to get hurt if it ever breaks out, and I'm afraid of that. But I mean, on the same token, I'm too old to die young. I don't care. But I mean, I want to leave a better world to my children and my grandkids. So,
right.
But I worry for them about if violence does break out, because they're surely fomenting it right now.
Yeah, well, they would like to for it to come to a head so they could do something, but that's going to be a mistake, because they haven't got the guns away from the people, and that's going to create, if it breaks out into a revolution, it'll be a 100 years war. They will not control the people as easy as they might think they will, you know, and it's going to be terrible. We don't want that, you know. So, and we'll never get back to where we were before. Not that we have so much liberty now, but once they get rid of, you know, you'll have states that will ban the Second Amendment and stuff. Now, how could you be a state if you don't have a Second Amendment? You can't be, but they'll do it. It'll be the balkanization of America is what'll happen. You'll have free states, and you'll have communist states. And that's what's going on.
They could have the state of Chicago and the state of New York and the state of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then we can push New York about 50 miles east and Los Angeles about 50 miles west, and that would take care of a lot of our problems. So.
Yeah, well.
Let me pipe in here for a second. If anybody wants to get into the queue, *6, we have nobody in the queue at all. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 awesome. And the 1, question or comment. Back to you guys. Go ahead.
Rosalind disappeared on me.
Yeah, you fell off.
Talked too long. She fell asleep waiting for us.
Yeah, there's not that many people with us tonight, so if you don't get many questions or anything, maybe unless you got something to talk about, or if Brent comes in and something to talk about, maybe we'll close down early tonight. But I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah.
I get up about 5 anyway, so I got to get going anyway. So, but I wanted to find out about that writ of habeas corpus, but also let you know that things are stirring here in Michigan, and if you talk to Bob Overhuel, ask him about that, because he's aware of it. So.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your input. We appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Well, there's nobody in the queue, Will. I'm going to take an opportunity. Oh, yeah, no, there's nobody in there. I noticed, John, that you put up on the front page there the former head of Pfizer and his warning about this vaccine, which is very good, because that has to be in front of everybody's mind, because that's a much, much bigger problem than you realize. I have another interview here with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and maybe we can put it on the site, John. And what she's explaining here is how the depopulation vaccine will work over the next 6 months. And she lays it out, and she has
Is it in videos?
It's one video that's an hour long.
Well, some videos, even on places that are on their own, for instance, Amazing Polly, none of her videos are working anymore. I don't know if she's aware of that, but her videos haven't been working in...
She got like six different sites. She's on Rumble. She's on BitChute. So you got to try.
Yeah, if you got to, you know, play, if you know where the location is, you know, where she's located, maybe, you know, drop me the URL when you get a chance. Because she's pretty good. I like to listen to her talk.
No, she's very good. Yeah. So I don't know who this one doctor here that's interviewing Sherry Tenpenny.
You got someone in the queue, by the way. If you want to do that after you take that person, whatever you want to do, but go ahead.
Yeah, Renette sent us. But anyway, I'll talk about that because things are going to get bad and they're going to lock us down again, and we're not going to be able to assemble. And that's designed so that NLA can't do their work. You know, if we can't assemble, then we don't. You know, then we don't have the ability to do committees of safety and all this other stuff. Anyway, I'm going to take this next person, PA State. Wow, I don't know what that is. State Call. Let me open them up. I don't know who this is. Give me your name, and I see you're from Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm Wendy Calder.
Okay, how's it
going? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hi. I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
My husband had court, and they ended up telling him that because the cop didn't show up, and they told him that it was going to be continued. I thought they usually would dismiss those things like that. You know what I mean?
The only way it's going to get dismissed when the cop doesn't show up is if you insist and you say, I'm ready. He's supposed to be here.
He did.
And the judge didn't dismiss the case?
No, he continued it. And it was even on a charge that he already took care of.
Yeah, that's bad because he's ready to go, and she's that's the trial date. And if you if you missed, they wouldn't continue it for you.
Right.
You know, I would sanction the job. I would write paperwork against that judge and report her to whatever agency takes care of rogue judges, but also
the magistrate judge.
Yeah, she needs to be censured.
And she does, because she's also like they have history of kickbacks. The judge that does the, go ahead.
Well, they're all corrupt. Go ahead. It's just the same old story.
Yeah. The judge that does the orphan court. They call themselves Four Sisters, and they all were giving kids to the DA would give them to the judge, and the judge would give them to the Second Mile group home, and they would
they're trafficking children is the long and the short of it. That's what they're doing.
And they're still sitting. Yep. And also the cops. So my husband, which shouldn't really happened, but they've been after us our whole lives. They gave him five DUIs, okay? Literally five DUIs. And not one of them DUIs was a driving under DUI suspension. But I got a DUI, my first one, I'm 42, and the second time I got caught driving, traveling. Well, they call it driving. They gave me a driving under DUI suspension. And I never even got convicted for the DUI yet. So I don't understand it. He gets 5, doesn't get the driving under DUI suspension at all, and not convicted yet. So, but me, I get that 1, and I'm not convicted yet. I go Wednesday for my court, and they end me up with the driving under DUI suspension without being convicted of a DUI.
Some states do that. Some states remove your license until you have your first hearing.
Well, that's...
I don't know that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Take the license, go ahead, but how can you charge me with a driving under DUI suspension if I'm not charged with a DUI yet? Like, I'm charged but not convicted.
Right.
Like, it seems like you're guilty until proven innocent, basically.
Well, that's the way it is, yeah, exactly. And so now they're not hiding it. They're just, you know...
No, correct. Yeah, they're just fictitiously doing it.
Right.
And it's bad. Center County, if you go on the corruption, if you go on the page, the corruption in Center County, PA, you will see a lot of stuff that is bad. And it's a lot of judges, and it's crazy.
It's so epidemic in America today. It's ridiculous. I can't believe it. They just had
it's normal.
We just had a bust up here, upstate New York, and it's like, you know, this is kind of a still country in that, and they got they got state troopers, you know, they had guns involved, they had drugs involved, and they had trafficking kids. I can't believe it. I said, this is not the Mexican border here. What are these guys doing? But you know, you got to stop and think. You have CPS who's trafficking kids, and so it can happen anywhere. You don't have to be on the Mexican border to see trafficked kids. They make a lot of money off of that crap.
Yep.
It's disgusting.
Every mother I know, their kids have been taken, including my own. They wanted me and my husband to get a divorce. They tried all this kind of stuff. They had my kids for 18 months so far, and they don't have anything on us, so they're trying to pull threads, you know, and they're trying to terminate our rights, which we never abused our kids or anything like that. So, but they took them on anonymous phone calls, and no facts of anything. When they signed the affidavit, he signed his name to the affidavit, which was, you know, false, all allegations, and they get away with that. People are too scared to fight.
Well, that's why we have to take our courts back, because you're really not, you know, you go in there and you don't really have the Constitution. They're treating you as a slave, as a corporate entity. And if you don't know how to stay out of their jurisdiction, they suck you in. 6 ways to Sunday. They get you, you know, when you do get sentenced and stuff, it's because somewhere along the line you gave them permission, whether you know it or not.
Right. And you if you do know how to go in there and fight them with fire, they don't like that. So they try to act like you're dumb and laugh at you and act like you know what you're talking about. Although you do, but
well, part of the strategy is don't go in there alone. You should go in there with a group of people so that there's witnesses, because they work better in the dark. You know what I mean?
They don't let you in. They won't let you in because of the COVID.
Well, they let you in,
but not anybody else.
See, that's bad. You know that means
it is.
that it's a private secret court.
Yes, and they all are. They all do that. Around here.
I would insist on not going unless they let the public in. They could throw me in jail. I said, look, you gotta have the public here. Otherwise, this is a star chamber. You can't tell me that the public is not allowed in here.
Right, and if they don't let them in, well, why don't you just do a Zoom then? Do a Zoom meeting. Because I feel better with the public being there than. And if not, then why are we not doing a Zoom meeting? Right?
The reason they're not letting the public look at the reason they get away without letting the public in is because there's not 50 people clamoring to come in all the time. They wouldn't know what to do if that happened. You know, if you don't make noise, they get away with it. You know,
they're
dead of night. And really, that's what this is going to be about. You know what I mean? Now, the problem is we got this new wave of deaths coming, because I hate to say it, but everybody that took the vaccine will start dropping dead here in the next six to 8 months.
I've been telling people.
And they're going to, you know what they're going to say? They're going to say it's a new wave. It's a mutated virus.
Yep.
It's all you guys that didn't want to wear masks and take the vaccine. You're the one that caused it.
Mm-hmm.
We really got to be screaming loud about the fact. And but what's going to become very apparent is everybody that's dying are going to be the vaccinated people.
Are the ones
people.
That have it. Yep.
And that's
the
point.
The magnets
we have
are sticking to them.
Right. Well, that's one problem. That's just one little problem.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the baby.
And it's not little. I just saw an electron microscope analysis of blood after they received the vaccination and all the nanoparticles and how all the red blood cells are
attaching.
No, they're no longer spherical. They got bumps all over them and stuff. Yeah, it's disgusting. It's really disgusting.
Ew, yeah. And plus they're affecting pregnant women.
Well, it affects everybody. I mean, pregnant women can abort their babies being around somebody that had the vaccination.
Right.
We've had cases of that. But you know, look at their husbands are getting it from them too, from the women. They're passing it in the semen and that, and men men tend to get strange bleedings and embolisms and all this stuff, you know. And it's really disgusting what's going on, and it's only going to get worse. And they're still giving the vaccine. This vaccine should have been pulled a long, long time ago. It's
and
such a big
not?
Crime. Such a big crime.
What are they?
They're going
to
throw
Anthony. Allowing this to happen?
They're going to throw Fauci under the bus, but that's just a bone. You know, I mean,
that's ridiculous for all them lives.
He's got a lot of lives that he's responsible for, but that's.
Yes,
why are they still giving the vaccine? Why are they giving donuts and prizes
why
and money and lotteries?
Why are they still taking it is the question. Why are they still taking it? That's ridiculous. You don't know enough by now that you shouldn't take that thing or any vaccine for that matter.
No, because they only hear, you know, what the mainstream is saying.
The fake news. Yep.
Yeah.
I stopped listening to that a long time ago.
Anyway.
Wow.
That's where we are. So beware. It's not over. Going to get worse before it gets better.
I know. I'm on a committee meeting.
We got to stick together. You got to go to all those meetings. You got to go to your county meetings, and you got to get people together. And I mean,
No. I mean on the NLA part. I'm learning.
Right.
Well, I have to learn first before I can do any of that because I don't want to go in there not knowing.
Knowledge is power. Yeah.
Knowledge is power. Exactly. And I like the way John teaches. Talks because he's powerful, so I listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
I'm on this call all the time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you
nice
for
talking to you, Wendy. Yep. Have a good night.
Okay. You too.
Yeah. Bye. So we have Veronica from Pennsylvania. Yes, Veronica. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm just listening to the conversation, and I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, you know, these people are racketeers and bribery, you know, we're going to bribe you, and they bribe the judges with a currency that is unconstitutional. That after, you know, Article 1, Section 10 was breached, they've been accepting a coin that is foreign to that which they swore their oath of office. I mean, it's got to stop. And it goes back to 1913. In my opinion, this is my opinion, Gerard, and you know I have my opinion from time to time, okay? In 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the 17th Amendment, what that did was breached Article 1, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution. When Article 1, Section 3 was breached, those senators who were already directly elected by the people to represent the people and the state were no longer representing the people and the state. So that essentially, the 17th Amendment essentially nullified the 10th Amendment. Since then, everything has fallen apart incrementally. It's been methodical racketeering from the get-go. And a wheel conspiracy, actually, if you look at a wheel conspiracy, and this is, right there in the legal definitions, a wheel conspiracy is a conspiracy in which a single member, usually a ringleader or a group, the Federal Reserve, engages in separate illegal dealings with two or more other members or groups, Democrats and Republicans, and there exists a shared criminal purpose amongst all the members of the groups engaged in that activity, or the activities. And of course that is, hey, we're going to get paid for doing this. It doesn't matter that it's unconstitutional. Hey, you know, we can do this because it says without the consent of Congress, we give our consent, we can go ahead and do this. The ringleader or groups which deal with other members or groups is called the hub. The hubs are the legislature in the separate states, of course, that go ahead and say, oh, yeah, we'll get the funding, so we'll get the bribe for, you know, going ahead and doing this for the federal government, meaning the Federal Reserve System, since 1913. And, of course, the 20th Amendment brought in the New Deal. The New Deal for who? I mean, why would a nation conceived in liberty need a New Deal? The New Deal comes in, and we have a corporate form of feudalism is pretty much what we have. So the ringleader or group, which deals with other members of groups, is called the hub. And the subsidiary parties that maintain individual relationships with the hub is called the spokes, our municipal authorities, right? Every state has got their municipal authorities. Such conspiracy is also known as a hub and spoke conspiracy. Parallel but separate objectives between similarly situated people do not make a wheel conspiracy. It would instead constitute multiple chain conspiracies. So your clerks in the courthouse and the courtroom itself has become like a protection racket so that, you know, there's no noise from the chains. A wheel conspiracy is shown when a number of people, the spokes, are engaged in similar relationships with the same individual or, you know, the what provides the current source of energy, the money, the hub. In a wheel conspiracy, the prosecution would have to prove that the existence of the other spokes was known to a particular defendant and that the defendant did something in furtherance of a single illegal enterprise to prove that he or she conspired with the other spokes of the wheel. They're all doing it for the money, the bribery. Hey, you get it, you get the shot, and hey, boom, give you a lottery ticket. You know?
They don't even hide it anymore. I don't know. Remember Obama?
That's what I'm saying, Gerard.
Remember when Obama was president? And he said, if Congress won't do it, we'll just do it.
Yes.
Make an executive order to do it. And he did it a couple times. He didn't go through Congress. And he just made his own law.
Right, and executive orders, if they're not challenged within 30 days, they remain law. And, you know, I think that the Democrats and Republicans who are representing us are so dumbed down, they don't even know that.
No, well, we don't have a Republican form of government anymore, really. And not only that, that corporation that they created, illegally created, it's been bankrupt for so long, it's not funny. How does a bankrupt fiction of the state operate? They're not allowed to do business if they're bankrupt.
But, hey, wait now. If you look in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, under corporation, okay, this is 1856, Bouvier, and it says a corporation sole, under corporation, there's like 14 or 15, you know, items there. And one of them is a corporation sole or sole corporation can only deal with real estate. Now, we all know that from dust we are until dust we shall return, right? So, where do we reside? Where do we reside until we return to our domicile? It's the spirit that keeps that, this piece of dirt. We're in our freehold, our earthen freehold.
Right.
So, you know, they told us what they're doing. As I see it, you know, all the words, they laid out the words the way they were supposed to be at certain times, and then they went ahead and they kind of changed the meaning so that future generations would not realize what it is that they did.
Yeah, and they're very good at it. They can change a word, like, you know, instead of, say, for or of instead of for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, things like, just to change the legal context of it.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, if you look in the 1785 dictionary, Johnson's dictionary, you'll see that states had one definition, and that is nobility. Even the Webster's 1828 dictionary still has nobility as the definition for states. So we, the people in 1787 of the United Nobility, in order to form a more perfect union for ourselves and our posterity, and if you look at the definition of esquire, you will see that they are the younger sons of noblemen forever. So they told us what they were doing, and only twice in that U.S. Constitution is the United States of America actually put of America in there. Everything goes to the United Nobility. To me, it's really fascinating, and I'm so glad I got involved with you guys because, you know, you kind of led me on this rabbit trail. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you because
You should be mad.
pardon?
I said, you should be angry if we put you on this path. You'll never rest again. You'll never sleep good again.
No, anyway. You know how I see this, Gerard, is that people chomp at the, you know, the tree of liberty. They're chomping at the leaves and the twigs and the branches and the trunk sometimes, but they don't get to the root of the problem. And
right.
Getting to the root of the problem, like I just, you know, to me, I love getting at the root of the problem. And that will change the soil in which it grows. You know?
And that's a good philosophy for healthcare too, because they're doing the same thing with healthcare. They're working on symptoms and not causes, and they never get to the root of the problem.
Exactly.
Is it any wonder that our government is any different than they are? You know.
Exactly.
Medicine is all screwed up. Everything's screwed up.
But then again, you know, they recognized that these problems were going to happen back in 1776, when in the course
well,
of human events.
It's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, and you know, right there is the problem was defined and the solutions given. When in the course of human events, and we're at that course of human events right now, this is the first paragraph, which we rarely hear anymore. It all starts out, oh, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, there were some there saying, because we hold these truths to be self-evident. There were others saying, although we hold these truths to be self-evident. So, you know, but that first paragraph needs to come back into the psyche of the people. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, number one, dissolve the political bands which connected them with another, and number two, and back then, of course, it was the Whigs and the Tories,
mm-hmm.
and today it's the Democrats and Republicans, and back in the first century it was the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and then number two is to assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. And number three, to have a decent respect for the opinions of mankind, declare the causes which impel to the separation. And especially with this virus stuff, we know that the body will heal itself if it is kept in good health and allowed to get the virus. The T cells and the B cells will go to work and, oh, man, everything will be cleaned up. And for future generations, if you breastfeed your child, you know, for a woman. So anyway.
It was nothing to begin with. It was a big lie.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It was.
However.
The A and B, all it was. But they just, now we're really screwed because now they released this spike protein into the people. And we have no idea where that's going to go. I mean, it's the same thing. A good immune system, I'm assuming, will handle it because God wasn't stupid. He knew what was going to happen. So I think that, you know, if, like you said, if the soil's good, it'll be able to fight it. But
absolutely.
You know, I mean, how many people walking around overweight, diabetes, this, that, you don't stand a chance.
And I think I shared with you guys the 2009 article that was in the newspaper, was in the New York Times, and it was in our local newspaper here in Pennsylvania. And it was about Wall Street investing in death. The younger the policyholder dies, the more money the investor makes. And that was 2009 when Obamacare was being discussed.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, but all you have to do is, you know, go to the computer, New York Times, Wall Street, Invest in Debt, 2009, September 2009. Yes, it's still on there.
Well, okay. we got a lot to do, and yeah, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes that you never hear about. I've done some deep diving on, and they've done some. You know, we're in World War III right now, whether people know it or not, because they're trying to kill America, every man, woman, and child, if they can. And there's been certain things that went on that's kept kind of quiet, but you just hear a little bit, like when those helicopters came into Mandalay Bay, and they took two satchels out. One went one way, one went the other. That was nuclear and biological warfare that they had. Information on, and they went in there. That there was shots fired and all that. They never told people, but that was designed to kill everybody in the United States. The next one was the big fentanyl bust, where they found enough fentanyl on that one sea container to kill every man, woman, and child from Canada to Mexico in America. I don't know how they would have distributed it, but it came in and they intercepted it. These are all things funded by China. You know, and they want to get us on this whole vaccine passport, your cell phone, and the social credit, and all that. They can't wait to do it. So we got a lot of stuff that we gotta, you know. Thank God that the white hats have been that much on it, but you know, it's going to take us bringing the bottom up to finish this thing.
Yeah, and you know, belief in the scriptures that may it be to them and theirs as they have tried to do to us and ours. And with that, I yield. And thank you.
Yeah, that's our only hope. You're right.
Bye bye.
Okay, bye bye. Okay, we got Catherine from California. Let me open you up. Go ahead, Catherine. What's on your mind?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. So I want to respond to that last caller. With all due respect, no, the 10th Amendment cannot be nullified by whatever acts of the thing that we call government. Go ahead.
What she's saying is, in effect, it nullifies it. You know what I mean? By the way that they're acting. I mean, look at, they keep talking about we're gonna get rid of the Second Amendment. You can't get rid of the Second Amendment and still have the United States. Can't do it.
Correct. That's right. But you can't, okay, so it's exactly the same thing as saying that, okay, well, someone's gonna come along and nullify, you know, 15 years into 20 years into my 30-year mortgage, someone's going to come along and nullify that. And now I need to have some other, contract with my financier. And it's going to be according to their terms, not mine. And I have no say in the matter. That's how absurd that is. So, no, the 10th Amendment cannot be nullified. Everything is de facto. But see, that's the thing, is that people are still looking at the thing we call government and expecting it to do government things. The thing that we're looking at and insisting is government is not government. So we're like, nobody ever comes to the whole conclusion, which is the thing that we call government is not government. Government is what the contract says it is, which is the Constitution. Yes, it's a compact, but it is also a contract. Yes, it is. And if it isn't pursuant to the contract, then it's null and void, which means every single thing that the thing we call government is doing is outside the contract. Therefore, it's not government. It's not government at all. It's by definition, an organized crime syndicate. So stop looking at the organized crime syndicate and expecting it to do government things, because it's never going to. So you can say, well, it nullified the 10th Amendment, which, I mean, even acknowledging something like that is an absurdity. So once we know, once you know that that's the truth, this is the thing that the thing we call government did, which basically it's not the 10th Amendment, it's the first through the 10th Amendment, and it's every single thing about the Constitution that the organized crime syndicate has, essentially nullified. There isn't anything that this thing we call government is doing that's constitutional. So if they're not operating by the contract, then again, they are by definition an organized crime syndicate. So it's an absurdity to say that it essentially has been nullified. What we need to say is everything the thing we call government is doing is outside the contract. So the only way to actually, restore the original de jure, lawful contract, constitution, is to throw off the thing that is, the actual organized crime syndicate.
But yeah, and it's not going to do it itself. We have to do it.
Right. It's not going to do it itself.
Government, they're never going to fix themselves.
Here's the other case that I want to make as well, is that no, it is not the duty of the military to do such a thing. No, if you had the military or the President of the United States or a former President of the United States do such a thing, then the thing that you want to restore doesn't exist. That cannot happen. It absolutely cannot happen that way. It's impossible for it to happen that way. If you had a President of the United States, come back into office and say magically just restore order to everything and then hand it back over to the people, what you have is not what you seek. You're looking for I'm assuming everybody's got the same, idea, that they're looking for the original organic de jure constitution, the 1789 constitution. That's what we're looking to, to restore, a lawful de jure, order of authority and constitutional republic, a restoration of the republic, if you will. Okay, if you have a president that's coming in to do something like that, or a military, both of which are servants to the people, the creator of the entire republic, then you have to admit that the creator of the republic has no more power. Only the servant of the creator has the power to get things back into order and then hand it back over to the creator of the whole operation, in the first place. It's extremely frustrating to hear people say we have to have the military come in and replace order and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely incorrect. There is absolutely no way for a restoration of the republic, the American republic, pursuant to the Constitution, to happen without the top of the order of authority, which is the people. That's you and me at the local level everywhere.
That's right. But don't forget, look, at the military takes an oath not to the Constitution, to defend the Constitution. When there's insurrection. And so they absolutely can come in and lock things down, because Congress isn't going to do it. And the Senate, we already know the courts are shot.
What authority does it, wait. What authority does the military have?
They got authority of the people. The people are the ones. You got the commander in chief runs the military, if you have one, and you restore
him. Who's the commander in chief?
Well, we're finding out that the commander-in-chief and the president don't necessarily have to be the same person anymore, do we?
No, actually, that's incorrect. That's absolutely incorrect. Now, you know that is constitutionally prescribed. That actually is, pursuant to the Constitution, Article 2, Section 2.
I understand that. But what's going on now is we have shadow president.
Hang on. Article 2, Section 2, I can't remember which clause, but it's in there, that the President of the United States is the commander-in-chief, when called into actual service. Those are the words of the Constitution. So everybody wants to forget about that fact. The President of the United States is not the commander-in-chief at all times. That is not a fact.
Right, but who can call the militia in? The governor, the president. So the minute you call the militia in, you're at war. He's the commander in chief. Simple.
The people. Who is the top of the order of authority here?
Well, that's right. It's always from the consent of the governed.
The President of the United States, the role is a representative of the state on the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's only as prescribed.
Well, I don't agree with you that he can't restore order if he goes, we're going to get rid of the Judiciary Act, we're going to come in and do this. First of all, there's been a coup here. We've been taken over by foreign forces that meddled in our election. So we're at war. So guess what?
Okay.
What happens when you're at war? Aren't some of those things suspended because of military? Because
what
of the
is, what,
martial
what
law? What's what all that?
No. N-O-N-O. Capital N-O, no.
Well, we're still under it because Lincoln never got us out of it.
Martial law does not exist in this country under the Constitution. It doesn't. The servant can never be greater than the master.
How do you have
the servant of the people, the creation of the people, declaring martial law that the servant now has power over the people?
There are war powers and things that happen during war that can only happen
sorry,
at war.
If
the courts are closed and there's chaos in the streets, you tell me what's going to happen. You can't get a judge if the courts are closed because there's active fighting. I'm not talking about right now. The courts are closed because they want them closed because it's a baloney thing. But under the articles of martial law, you can't even have martial law as long as the court is open. And there's no active hostilities within 30 miles.
So you're saying that it would be desirable to have martial law?
No, I'm saying it's necessary sometimes to restore order. It's a power of the military and the people.
Where exactly is that stated? Where exactly is that power delegated?
It's in the war manuals and it's not in the Constitution.
And it is not in the Constitution. You show me where. Constitutionally, the Constitution doesn't have any clause that says except where delegated authority exists in some manual that shall exist henceforth.
The Constitution doesn't spell everything out on it gives a guide. It doesn't necessarily spell everything out. We have the three branches of government.
Hang on. It doesn't spell everything out?
It doesn't, no. It does not. It doesn't spell out all the specifics of everything.
It says the
Tenth Amendment, what does it say? It says, and any other such things are given to the people. It doesn't tell you how to do that. It doesn't tell you how that's going to happen, does it? It doesn't tell you how that power flows to the people, does it? It's up to we the people to figure that out.
The power is delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited. No. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states.
Right.
Are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people.
Right.
Now, where do you?
So how does that happen? I'm asking you, how does that happen?
How can you possibly extrapolate from that some authority can exist sometime in the future, according to the good ideas and best intentions that are, codified in some manual, that can be held over the creator of the contract? The contract exists to protect the rights and security of the rights of the people, period. Anything that it's doing that isn't that
right.
is a violation of the Constitution. So where does anyone extrapolate in any word or clause or, you know, sentence or word of the Constitution that some authority comes along and declares
a delegated authority over
the people? It isn't delegated. We didn't delegate. I mean, sane people do not delegate some authority to rule over them. As a matter of fact, that's what the Constitution is. It is a guarantee against rulers, a guarantee of freedom from rulers.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that to make a statement like the 10th Amendment is nullified by acts of the servant, when the servant is what the contract says it is and nothing more, the contract, the product of the contract is the Constitution. I mean, the Constitution, the product of the Constitution, let me restate that. The product of the Constitution is the government. So the government, as the product of the Constitution, has no authority delegated to it to expand itself. Only the people can do that. And we did not agree to have the servant of our own creation to expand itself to enslave us in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
No, I'm talking about the restoring the Constitution. You're saying that there's no way that the military can come in and restore the Constitution.
No, there is no way for the military to come in and restore the Constitution.
So then there's no sense in them taking an oath to the Constitution, then, if that's the case.
No, actually, that's not true, because what are they doing? What are they there for? Are they there to actually, are they there for that purpose? Does the military exist for that purpose? No, it's for world, it is for defending our borders from foreign invasion.
Foreign and domestic.
It is not there for, any other purpose.
You have internal... You have internal strife that's domestic.
Yes,
and yes, we're supposed to use our militias that don't exist anymore.
Yes, foreign and domestic.
Right.
However, the servant of the people, not having done that and having gotten to the degree of corruption and, there's all kinds of adjectives assigned to that. Everybody knows. No sense wasting time on that. Everybody knows the derogatory, you know, adjectives that we can actually apply to that, but the military not having done any of that, the individual, it's not the military that swears an oath to support and defend the Constitution. It's the individual oath taker that does. The individual oath taker must be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. That's what our committees are doing. That's what the legitimate committees must, you know, do. Is to hold the individual oath-sworn public servant accountable to the fullest extent of the law. Not Congress, not your Board of Supervisors, not your school board, not the swamp, the individual. And nobody's ever talking about holding the individual accountable. Nobody answers to you except the person that actually represents you, whether you voted for them or not. That's your school board trustee, your city council person, your board of supervisors or commissioners, your mayor, your governor, your U.S. representatives, your congressmen and your senators, which, you know, that's a whole nother thing we have a problem with. The individual is accountable to the people of the district that they answer to. Nobody else. Nobody else. They don't answer to anyone else. Congress can, you know, you can't drain a swamp. You can't do that. You can't, somebody can't come in and just drain the swamp and say, blah, 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 we got all these sealed indictments and we're going to, you know what, you know how long people have been talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
That is not even remotely possible. And even if it were something that actually could happen, because I'm at the point now in my activism where I say, never say never, because pretty much anything can happen. And that's true. I think everybody would agree with that. There, even if you did have a president or a governor or a, you know, some servant, some oath-sworn public servant, and I do reiterate the word servant, they are beneath the people. If you have any level of servant that you're relying upon to restore your liberty, you don't have it. You can't get it that way. It can't happen that way. The only way that that can happen is from the low, not just at the local level. I mean, from the local level.
Wow.
And the only people that answer to the people in that local, at that local level, is the people that they're responsible for, which is the people that are, you know, their elected representatives. Other than that, you would have to say, well, we can't have liberty until the servant of our own creation actually manifests that for us on our behalf.
Well,
and
that's
hands it back over to us, all bright and shiny. And
basically, that's what has to happen, because what you're describing, the people doing it at the local level, and it's never going to happen because we don't have enough people.
Well, then why
educated. We could go to a monarchy with a benevolent king, and we'd be better off. What about a benevolent king? What about a monarchy? I'm just for the sake of argument. So you threw this thing up. You said nobody can do it. It has to come from the people who are dumbed down, stupid, and they're vaccinated. They're all going to be dead in 3 years. So what's our next choice now?
Yeah, it's not going to be. It doesn't require the masses. It doesn't require the masses. It only requires the people that, the people in
Let me tell you, government serves at the end of a barrel of a gun, ultimately, whether you know it or not. I mean, that's what Mao Zedong said, and he proved that it's at the barrel of a gun. And that's the only thing that's holding them back right now, is that they haven't taken our guns away. And they know that it's going to be, you know, a shitstorm if they try.
No, it's not, because they're never going to take guns away. That's never going to happen, not in this country. They're never going to take guns away. They'll just take away the bullets or take away, you know, whatever. They'll take away your ability to actually use a gun. But, I mean, that requires very, very extremely little, because the people will acquiesce and will comply with whatever perceived authority does. That's why, you know, no, your argument still does not hold.
They will never take the guns and the bullets away, I'll tell you right now. There is more militia movement in this country and patriots than you know that have plenty of bullets.
Anybody who thinks that the people in this country with I don't care how many guns you have, I don't care how big your underground arsenal is with all of your, you know, ammunition and all of your, you know, prepping and all that, I don't care how big you think you are. And how many other people across the country, there is absolutely no match for the militarized law enforcement and military and, you know, the government that's going to be fighting against you. So anybody who thinks that they're going to rise up against their government because they still have the power of, you know, the Second Amendment is delusional.
That's not true.
That's not true.
That military is not as powerful as you think it is.
Okay.
Look at what about the Warsaw Ghetto uprising where they dropped pistols in there, and then the people took the pistol and shot the Hessian soldier with the little pistol and took his gun. You see, it'll be 100 years war because there's so much guns and ammo, they won't be able to sleep at night. It's not going to be a war like you think it
is. Okay, wait a minute.
It's going to be like a guerrilla warfare.
Okay, so you're so right. You're so right. If, and I, that's a capital if.
It's going to be horrible. It's not going to be, it's going to be 100 years war.
Hang on. That what you're saying, you know, dropping, you know, guns and all that kind of stuff, and we're going to have that power. No, what are you talking about? There's only one lawful and peaceful way to restore the republic. That is literally through the restoration of the committees of safety. And actually, what we're doing
is
the committees of restoration.
I agree. That's why I'm here because I understand
The committees of restoration and the local committees at the county level and all that kind of stuff. But that is actually the truth, or it isn't. You can't say, well, the only way we can do this is by the people. The president says, well, the only way that we can do, the only way America can be saved is by the people. That's either true or it's not true. That can't be partially true, except for the fact that the military and the President of the United States would be able to hand it back over all fixed up and shiny, bright, and new, you know, to the people, and then we have to run with it and maintain it. That's BS. That is a load of crap. And people need to understand that. What you're, the scenario that you're talking about, dropping all the ammo and stuff in, you know, in World War II.
Well, what happened is it was an error.
Wait a minute. That would be true if the thing we call government hadn't learned anything since then. And if they hadn't fortified themselves beyond comprehension with every, I mean, listen, I live in California. I'm calling you from California, okay? I can tell you everybody understands what DEW is, the, you know, directed energy weaponry, and, you know, the fact that you can burn out, you can incinerate man-made structures and leave the greenery standing. Okay? People don't even know what they're looking at. It's like 9/11. Nobody had ever seen anything like that before. Nobody knew what they were looking at. And, you know, so they're convinced that, okay, well, it's just a freak thing. And the rest of the country gets that. A handful of people in this country understand that that was not a wildfire. These were not wildfires. I lived in South Lake Tahoe, where anybody is welcome to look up the Angora Lakes fire. That fire rolled down 300 feet from my house. So I know from forest fires. And the thing that happened in Paradise, California, and the thing that happened in Santa Rosa, California, and Malibu, California, these things that continue to happen, that's not an accident. That's not even remotely a wildfire or a campfire. And the things that, you know, people are led to believe. And if people think that their guns with their bullets are going to match against the thing we call government, which is an organized crime syndicate, you know, the weaponry of which is beyond comprehension, I'm telling you right now, you are high. That is not going to happen. And you know what? I mean, on a very, very low level, I want to make this case. On a very, very low level of that principle, that very principle, you can think of David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. They did nothing wrong. They did everything right. They were completely, they never did anything wrong to begin with. No victim ever, no crimes ever, and yet they're all 100% dead. Schaefer Cox, one of our favorites to bring up, you know, never, you know, committed a crime. He was completely railroaded and set up, and yet he's still 100% in prison.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, people need to understand, listen, you got the good ideas and best intentions, but so does the thing we call government. But that isn't government. Stop vacillating between the idea that that's government and understand the fact, the indisputable fact, that that thing that we have that is seated by government, and most of the people who are involved in it, you know, let's face it, your school board, your city council, your boards and commissions, your board of supervisors, et cetera, most, not all, but most of the people that sit on these boards believe that they're just like you and me. They're people that get elected to think that they're doing a good job. They're just doing their job. They don't even know. They wouldn't know the Constitution if they were wearing it.
Yeah, meanwhile, they're committing treason every day.
Yeah, every single day.
Oh.
And they don't really actually necessarily know. Nevertheless, it is an organized crime syndicate. It is not government. So the courts that you're talking about, first of all, that's the other thing about the courts, is that you're assigning too much authority to the courts that's not delegated. The role of the judge is not to be a judge, to be the judge, jury, and executioner from the bench. The judge is there as a administrator, and everybody knows that, but they're not comprehended because they're saying, well, we can't get anywhere without the courts. What are you talking about? There is no court unless you're in it. There is no court unless you're in it. And if you're in it, if you know the law, then you're the one who's running the show here, not the judge. It's not up to the judge. You're signing an authority to a layer of government that was never delegated. That's not what they're there for.
And we understand that, that he's just a traffic cop, but they're always usurping their authority all the time. Look at how many times we've been to court, and look at what the judges do to us in front of everybody. You know, They don't care.
There's a really very good example that people can go and look at is, I am not defending Rick Martin by any stretch of the imagination, but if you go and you look up the Michigan, whatever it was, you talked about it, I think, with Gerard a few weeks back. Maybe I think you did. I could be wrong, but I think that might have been you. Talking about this thing in Michigan where, a pizza cafe owner who is actually a foreign immigrant, a Polish immigrant, was kind of railroaded by the local government there. And she was dragged into court because she wasn't, observing all of the, you know, protocols.
Right.
So she's dragged into court, and our friend Rick Martin from the Constitutional Law Group, which I have no affiliation with, by the way, I just needed to say that, went into court, and, it wasn't really very flattering for him. But if you watch the video, and it's actually, everybody should look this up. Everybody, this is a teachable moment. Everybody should look this up. It's Judge Rosemary Aquilina, A-Q-U-I-L-I-N-A, Aquilina, and she's a famous judge. And every single thing that she said was against the law. Every single thing she said and did, actually, as a matter of fact, was against the law. But she gets away with it because what's the problem? What's the missing factor? The missing factor is there's no enforcement mechanism. So she sentences, Rick Martin, who's there as a Sixth Amendment guaranteed assistant to counsel, okay, to 93 days in jail because he listed himself as such. He probably said lawyer. He probably said assistant to counsel. All she right. wanted to make the case that if you're not a bar attorney, you have no place in the court. With the defendant, every single thing that came out of that judge's mouth is a teachable moment. It is a teachable thing. Every single thing she said was illegal. It's illegal and unlawful, but she did it anyway. And why are they doing this? It's because, well, or what? That's always the question. Or else what? What's your else? There has to be an enforcement mechanism, and that can only come from the local level because the local level is the top of the hierarchy. It is the author of the law, the author of, in the responsible party, the party to the contract. So we, the people, have to be above every single level of government, but you have to have your head there and understand. No. You know, it's going to take practice to know how to use your language and the actual law to stand down a person like that. Full disclosure, I'm pretty sure that Rick Martin didn't really anticipate that level of vitriol and actually what she had actually done. But the truth of the matter is every single bailiff in the courtroom and in the courthouse actually answers to the judge. That's not how it's supposed to be.
Right.
But that's how it actually is. They will do whatever the judge says because they think that that's their job. But that's a lack of knowledge. But that's the entire problem, the entire, you know, up and down the entire spectrum, is that this all hinges on a fundamental lack of knowledge of every single layer. So it's not only the people that are serving in the government, but it's also on the part of the people and even the people who think they know the law. The problem with that is that, you know, he didn't have the practice dealing with somebody like her. But the fact of the matter is, in actual law, if an individual in oath sworn public service is going to be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law, then they need to understand, and everybody needs to understand, that like, for example, the judge knew or should have known that every single word that was coming out of her mouth was unlawful. And ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Like you said, there's no accountability, though. There's no consequences.
Right. So
there's no accountability.
There's no consequences because there's nobody there actually enforcing it.
Right. Well, it's hard. What are you going to do, get the people to tar and feather her? I mean,
No. That means that you have to, you're not getting your sheriff on board. This is the thing about the whole thing with the sheriff. You're not going to get your sheriff on board. That's not where we are. We are at the point in the Declaration of Independence where it says we have the right and the duty. I think you did. You just read that earlier. We have the right and the duty to alter or abolish or to throw
that
off.
That was Nikki. Yeah, to separate the bands that bind, right?
That's right. Well, okay. Well, the band separate the bands. That's different. That's not what we're talking about, because when they were saying that, they were only making the declaration in the separation of bands, you know, bands that whatever that term that I have to look, but that particular thing that we're talking about there, separating, that is only making the declaration of separation from another form of government.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about now. We don't have another form of government. We don't have another form of government. We have an organized crime syndicate.
Right.
You have to look at it in no other way. The thing that we call government, and it is due to our neglect, so we do have to accept responsibility for the fact that it is a result of our neglect, and that we have to have the humility, actually, and the patience to accept that fact that all of this is due to our negligence, and that we have to take the correct steps, and we have to sever the consequences for all of that, all of the consequences that come along with that, for having neglected, you know, our responsibility to keep our republic. We didn't. It's gone. It's completely over. It's gone. There is no republic. It's an organized crime syndicate in its place. Whether the oath takers are, you know it or not. But there is no option for a sheriff. You don't get to, they don't, when you have an organized committee and your infrastructure, what I call infrastructure, when you have that infrastructure, there is no option for the sheriff. It's not like, okay, well, we're going to wait until, you know, election, you know, we're going to remove you at the ballot box. That's absurd. We're at the point in the Declaration, in our American history, where it's time to throw off government. We're not waiting for representation or for processes, political processes. It is like right now. This is unlawful, and it's going to stop. Now, the sheriff has the opportunity to become constitutionally literate and compliant right now, or the option is adjudication and, all of the ensuing consequences to the fullest extent of the law, period. Those are your options, sheriff, two, door number one or door number two, which is it going to be? And there's a process for getting there. This is an overview, but I mean, there's a process for getting there. You can't just go there and use that language. But that's essentially what you're doing. The people are the boss of the operation, or they're not. The people are the boss of the operation, or they are serfs. They are servant. They're slaves.
Well, you know, it's so bad that they're teaching these judges. Yeah, just the fact that you show up in their court gives them the jurisdiction over you, because they're not a real court. They're a corporate fictional entity, has nothing to do with the Constitution, and so therefore they don't feel obligated to stand up on any of those rights, and they will get you to consent into that six ways to Sunday. They teach them how to trap you into consenting. And like well, you said, with that lawyer, all he had to do is say the wrong word in the wrong place, and that judge feels comfortable because he's now acquiesced to her tyranny, so to speak. So I know there's what's his name, David Strait up there, and he's working in Canada a lot, and he's had some good luck because he never lets them suck him into their jurisdiction. And he's
well,
able.
Okay.
To.
Have you ever seen him in court?
I haven't seen him. No. I know that he had people that had same thing where they closed the restaurant with the mask thing, and I know that he's had them restored. He's actually won the cases.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. Let me explain a little something about that. If you're going into court, if you're a business and you're dealing with the whole thing that shall not be named, because I can't say the word. I just can't say the word. these are focus grouped, manufactured words, and no, I'm not going to play the game. So anyway, that which shall not be named. Anybody who's dealing with that kind of stuff as a business, I've helped many across the country, many, probably at least 100 across the country in the last year and a half. Okay, so year and 15 months, something like that. Anyway, so anybody who's getting sucked into court to answer in a courtroom, okay, that's great if you have the courtroom acumen, to do something like that. But if you've gotten to that point, you missed the point.
Oh, exactly. That's what he teaches.
Show up for that. You have missed the point because I'm telling you right now.
You don't want to get there.
Here's the thing. Anybody who has a business who has not violated the terms of their existing contracts owes nothing to anyone. So anyone who's imposing some sort of a fine or fee or whatever, or is OSHA, ABC, Department of Health, Department of Labor, any of these agencies that reach out to you in any way, shape, or form to get you to be sucked into the system to show up for a hearing or
as far as David being in court, he was there after the fact. She already had been in, already been charged. He came in to fix it. So she was already in court. He had to show up in court. There was no paperwork that he could do to keep her out. At that point, she had already done her own paperwork. So he came in to fix it. I understand what you're saying, and he tells you exactly that. You don't want to get to court because, like you said, just by the fact that, you're showing up there, you're giving them authority.
You have to ignore it. Another necessary component to that is that it doesn't hurt to have a script or people that own businesses actually really would behoove them to do role play and to practice actually standing down any perceived authority that comes in to try to, stop them from doing their business or to try to shut them down or to try to scale them back. I mean, I have my clients actually, I say clients loosely. The friends of mine that I have that I've helped to stay in business 100% non-compliant with any of the nonsense, they understand and they have the language. They've been trained and we've role played the language to stand down anybody who would come in and try to to shut them down or to intimidate them into compliance. We have those across the country here that are just. They're non-compliant. They don't space out. They don't mask. They don't enforce any of that kind of stuff. They just go on about their business like they did before. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's so hard for business owners to understand is that as soon as you acknowledge any of the threats that are coming from these agencies, you are acknowledging that they have some authority over you, and they don't, unless you have violated the terms of your contract, in which case they must provide evidence of that. That comes in the form of what's called, like, for example, with OSHA, with your state OSHA, Cal OSHA, I'm sure you got an NY OSHA, whatever, you know, state OSHA. Some do-gooder agent is going to possibly swear out a warrant against you. It's going to come in the form of an inspection warrant. And that inspection warrant isn't worth the paper it's written on unless it has all five elements of the Fourth Amendment. It still applies. The Fourth Amendment still applies. If you don't have all five elements of the Fourth Amendment and you don't have a wet ink signature from a judge, you don't have a seal from the county, you don't have a filing with the county clerk, with the clerk's name that you can actually look up, none of these things apply. And actually, I have seen so many in here in California. We've got quite a few, actually, where they've tried this, and these friends of mine, I say clients, but friends of mine who have ignored those and carried on with their business and said, you know what, if you show up in my business again, come back with a warrant. And if you don't have all five elements of the Fourth Amendment, then don't even try it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're continuing on with their businesses. You know, people that acquiesce to some degree, to any degree, if you show up for a so-called hearing, it's not going to be a hearing. There is no law. There is no law. Government cannot legislate to mandate anything on people. And having been an activist in the vaccine truth movement, people can call it anything that they want, but you're a vaccine truther or you're not. You can call yourself a medical freedom person, whatever, I don't care. If I'm an anti-vaxxer, okay, because I have a brain. Okay, so here's the deal. Back in the day, I kept saying, if you call this legislation a mandate, you are going to make it worse. There is no way that you can do anything else but make it worse by calling it a mandate. So we have people that, like, for example, a friend, he's lovely and all that stuff. However, he refused to change his branding from stop mandatory vaccination. When I said, if you continue on with that, this is back in 2015 when he created it, if you continue on with that, you're only going to make it worse. Now we have people in legislature, in our federal and state legislatures, that are calling it a mandate. And why? It's because people don't know, you know, we don't have a constitution, so people aren't going by that. It's by precedent or whatever the last guy got away with. So there isn't any foundation for government. You don't have to have legislation anymore. You just have to have some perceived authority stand up and say, this is what is now law, and everybody's going to follow it, or else there's going to be some sort of fine.
Well, that's what they do all across. That's what's in operation right now.
That's exactly how they operate. And that is 100%
towns and counties.
Exactly. That is 100% knowledge deficiency. If you have knowledge and you have taken the time to understand, I mean, everybody, who was I listening to just recently who said, you know, you need to, everybody in America needs to pick up a law book. If you don't know the law, you know, you are a slave. If you don't know what the law is, then you are a slave. And it is so true. If, you know, and that's the problem that we have is that it, and, but see, understand too, that's the purpose. This, you know, talking about Agenda 21, everything, and I mean 100% of what we're dealing with right now is driving Agenda, new and Agenda 21, which is it's not the end goal, it's the vehicle to get us to the new world order and, you know, to the one world global governance where, you know, there's elimination of representative. Well, I have a talk that I give on the elimination of representative government. I can prove that. Out in the open, elimination of representative government, nobody knew what hit them. But if, you know, if people understood the actual law and how it's supposed to be, do I need to say that? If people knew, it wouldn't exist. That's kind of stupid. That's kind of redundant. If people knew, it wouldn't exist.
If they knew better, let's put it that way. You know.
If people if people knew the power that they actually had instead of it, because we've been trained in the public education system, we've been trained that government is the authority. I mean, we call it authority, right? If there's something going on or whatever, we're going to call the authorities. Or, you know, if you don't be careful, we're going to call the authorities. Or, you know, who's the authority? You know, people that are not trained in, you know, because we stupidly handed over to our servant the education of its own master, we have become a subject, you know, basically the servant has become the master.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now subjugated to the creature of our own making, and people don't know how to, we don't, and I'm not saying they as if everybody else and I'm so smart. I'm saying, hey, you know what? Listen, I got to be 50-something years old and never knew any of this stuff. And it took, you know, several years, and you know, in early on, much of my knowledge. Well, what was really interesting for me is because I wanted to know the bigger picture and the deeper problems that were going on, and understanding that the problem with Common Core, for example, was not about the crappy education standards and, you know, the Marxist indoctrination and all that kind of stuff. It was infinitely deeper than that. And what was that? And so I went in, you know, deep into that rabbit hole, you know, to find out all of that stuff. And so many of the, you know, much of the education that you can find, basically it's all on the internet. Everything's on the internet. But basically, the knowledge that you can find, I already had when I had finally decided to actually go ahead through the education course through NLA, which was at the time the Constitution course. Well, it was first the civics course and then the Constitution course, which are fantastic, fantastic. But I already had a lot of those, Bill Thornton and Michael Bednarik. And as a matter of fact, Michael Bednarik was a close personal friend by the time, you know, I actually finished the NLA course and all, and so it's a great resource for that knowledge. I know that the curriculum has changed with the consent of the governor, which I haven't actually done. I need to do that, but great.
Well, look, we have an opportunity here that people should understand, because they created a problem, and we need to do like they do and never let a good crisis go to waste. They have the kids staying home and being schooled on the internet. This is an opportunity to get your kid out of the government school. Don't send them back. And use those sources that we have, the civics course, the Constitution course, to train the children. Because that's our only hope. Look, they've already gotten over three generations of children already. So that's serious. So if we got to start training our children and ourselves in these things, so that you can articulate the law when they, you know, and stand up and look at, you should be able to maneuver a courtroom with a high school education. It's not rocket science.
Absolutely.
It's not rocket science.
Absolutely.
You know.
And it doesn't take 8 years of law school to do it. As a matter of fact, if you took 8 years of law school, you're going to need more to undo what you learned and you thought you knew.
Well,
you
know, it's what Samuel Clement said, and it's the big problem. It's the age-old problem. You know, Mark Twain, mm-hmm. Samuel Clemens, he said, it ain't what you don't know that gets you. It's what you think you know that ain't so that gets you, and that's so true.
Oh, gosh, that's so true.
And that's why when you're talking to people with PhDs and college educations and especially attorneys, they're the worst, because they think they know everything and they don't even know the beginnings of what they should know. You know, they have, like you said, they have no idea about the Constitution or what it even says or what it means.
That's right.
Much less how to take the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and stack them together and come out with this idea in this document where it is the consent of the governed. You know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My son is, my son actually wrote a really brilliant, piece for his profile on the NLA website, because I included it as part of his homeschooling. And actually that was, I don't know if it's still on there, but it was published, on one of those pages, I don't know, education page or welcome page or something, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's still there, but anyway, Christopher Duran. And he's 19 now.
I'll look it up and see. We'll
yeah, Christopher Duran, D-U-R-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 19 now. And he's decided, because he could go anywhere, he actually has an eidetic memory, which is like a, you know, it's kind of like on the order of a photographic memory, but he has a very fine mind, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
He has a high IQ, and he really, literally, the world is his, you know, it's all up to him what he wants to do. And he wanted to be a doctor, and then he decided that maybe now, at this particular point in time, is not the best time for him to do that. He, instead of going to any university that he wanted to go to, he wants to go to JC. Because, he, for one thing, because he knows that JC is beneath him academically, but that he can actually help other people to understand that JC is probably the best you can do right now, because all of the universities are going to be teaching the same ideology that got us where we are and we're in such a mess. He actually said that. So.
Well, it's hard. It's hard today in colleges and stuff, because if you, you know, the professors, they want you to robot their opinions and stuff. So when you put the truth down, they fight you. You know, it becomes tough.
My niece is at Baylor. My niece is at Baylor, actually, and she's home for the summer, but she's at Baylor for the next 2 years. She just finished her first year, and she'll finish within 3 years, but because she is an academic. But, you know, not everybody actually is, and so, you know, but the point being that she didn't choose Baylor. She didn't decide that that was, you know, the best thing for her, you know, a big-time university that was going to offer her the degrees that she wanted, which she was going in pre-law, which, let's face it, you know, pre-law, that's a sexy thing to say, I'm pre-law. You know, everybody loves that, right? But she changed her direction, and I don't really think that that's really a great mm-hmm. direction either, but it's psychology, but she's dissatisfied, and she doesn't, and after just 1 year, well, why? Because she's in a dorm, and for most of the time, not all classes, but most of the time, they're in their dorm doing their work in their classes. Some of them are live classes, but they're all masked up, and, you know, it's
not a good time to try and begin higher education. I don't know what to tell you. You're depressing me.
I actually flew across the country. I did a Liberty tour last year in October, and I had said, you know, I'm not going to wear a mask, you know, but the crew that actually, it's my own outfit actually, but it's there in Virginia. And so the Virginia crew actually went ahead and bought my ticket and got me on an airline, a flight. My son and I actually flew out to Virginia for this thing last October. And on the way back, I mean, it's a long story, but on the way back, we got blocked from our flight home. Now, our bags had all gone home to Sacramento, and and my son and I got stranded in Charlotte, North Carolina, for 4 days, because I had asked a question. So I stood up and asked you know, there was a flight attendant that was sitting next to me, across the aisle, but sitting right next to me, who said, you might want to put on your mask. And I said, well, I need to speak to somebody about that. And so she got the flight attendant, like the head flight attendant. I go back to the back of the plane. We're in the very last seat, of this piece of crap American Airlines. Never flying American, by the way. Piece of crap equipment. Anyway, I got to the back little section there, speak to the flight attendant, and I said, can you ask, or can you know, I just want to ask what accommodations you make by law for people who can't cover their face. And she says, well, I'll ask the captain. Well, this connection, this flight from D.C. to Charlotte was a very tight connection for every single person on that plane. And it was boarded, and we moved away from the out on the tarmac. We moved away from the gate very early, which was great for everybody. So everybody's in a great mood, right? So the flight attendant says, well, I'll call the captain. So she calls the captain, and she goes, well, the captain said that if you don't put on your mask, we'll go back to the gate. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. I'll comply. I just needed to ask the question, and I just needed to get you to state the answer. So thank you. So I sat down. The one and only time in all of this, and I literally mean I have never put a mask on my face, but I had a Madras type of a scarf that I wrapped loosely around my face, and I complied 100%. 100% with the policy of the airline. And hey, guess what? When we got to Charlotte, I get to the end of the ramp there. Remember, we're the last seat, right? Mm-hmm. And there's other people getting ready to board the next flight. And a manager comes down and goes, Mrs. Duran, a word. This is the second time on this that happened, actually. And they proceeded to tell me that I was going to be blocked from the next flight because I wouldn't comply with the policy. And I kept saying, okay, can you inform me of how I was out of compliance with the policy? Because I read the policy and I knew before I even got on the flight, a week before I got on the flight, what the policy was. And to my knowledge, I complied. So can you inform me of how I was not in compliance? And they couldn't do that. All they could do was restate the script, their script that they get in professional development. But they can't go beyond that because there is no principle underlying the whole thing. Now it just happens to be that I was speaking to a beautiful black woman with these gorgeous dreads, braids, actually not dreads, but gorgeous braids, beautiful. And I said, so we're back at the lunch counter. In which case, you know, I think that most people probably know what I'm talking about when I say lunch counter. And unfortunately, she didn't take kindly to that at all and escalated that to upper management. And I said, hey, I had already asked for upper management. I want your senior manager here, and I want to speak to that person right now. And that person actually ended up cornering me, that person with another man, cornering me and my son, and repeating the same complete BS policy, but never answering the question, how was I out of compliance? So if anybody who asks a legitimate question of these airlines or other any businesses that you're exercising your inalienable rights, well, it's actually, that's not true. That's not actually true. This is also an educational point as well. It's not an inalienable right. As a matter of fact, it's a statutory right. And a statutory right, even though being statutory right being an absurdity, an oxymoron, the truth of the matter is that it is a civil rights issue. It is not an inalienable right because the airline absolutely, the owner of the airline absolutely has the authority to say, you know, discriminate against anyone for any reason. That's their inalienable right. They have a right to their property, their airline and their function and their business operations.
Well, that's true to a point, but the trouble is they take federal money and that makes them a public thing, and so then they have to give you unalienable rights, not only civil rights.
No. We can't rely on that. Actually, no, that's not actually true, because we can't rely on that, because the truth is, we can't have it both ways. We either have inalienable rights or we don't. And the inalienable right of the business owner is to be able to discriminate. Absolutely. You can discriminate because I have black skin or blue eyes or, you know, what have you.
You can discriminate until you become an entity of the government, a fiction of the state, by accepting money and letting them run you. Walmart takes, I forget how many billion dollars a year from the government, so they can't say they're a private organization. They're taxpayer-funded. They're taxpayer-funded. You're blurring the lines.
So let's go your way. So let's go your way then. So you're saying, okay,
an owner of a business does have the right to discriminate to a point. To a point. I mean, suppose he tells me I got to wear a noose and hang from the ceiling for the flight. Can he do that?
Yes, because you have the opportunity to say, you have the ability to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to comply with that. Yes, they can say, that is a requirement. The owner of the airline can say, you know what, it's a requirement that every single male, customer must sleep with the captain. Okay, they can make that policy because it's their business. Okay, they can do that. But it's up to you whether or not you're going to comply with their rules. So here's the thing. That's the whole deal with the Civil Rights Act, is that we actually have that we need to, not that we should, or not that we, no. No, not that we need to.
See, I disagree, because it's public transportation. That whole word "public" is what should put the damper on them. It's different. Look, there's public transportation because it's the only place you can go, and it's a monopoly. I'll argue with you, and say no, they don't have an unlimited amount of control over me when they want to make some arbitrary and capricious rule and say that I can do it because I'm a private. They're not a private. They're a public transportation system,
funded. No, they're not public though. But they're not public.
American Airlines is not a public, isn't considered public transportation. It's open to all the public.
No, it's not public transportation, no. It's open to the public, but it's open to the public like, you know, what is it, the Gold's Gym or, you know, Safeway or whatever. It's open to the public like that. It is not a public, benefit like public schools.
But I'm telling you, they are a public benefit because they accept taxpayer money.
No, they're not. They do take taxpayer money. That's true.
So when do they become a public entity? They're a fiction of the state to begin with. Okay. They're a fiction of the state. They're not even a DBA. They're a corporation.
Okay, so let's take... but that's the whole thing. They're a corporation, but it still is a private sector. Mm-hmm. They can do whatever they want to do within, you know, and that is actually where one of the places where we have you're absolutely right. There's a blurring of lines. However, that shouldn't exist because that is a private business. That business can do business however they want. Virgin does, you know, business the way they want. American does theirs.
Going with that, then they should be able to say, we don't require masks whether the state does or not, then, because I'm a private business.
They can. They absolutely can. They don't, but they can. They can say anything that they want. They're not beholden to the government to say, you know, everybody needs to wear a mask. There is no law that provides for that.
Exactly.
There's no provision in law that does that. So
the short of it is if somebody would take advantage of that and make an airline that says you don't have to wear a mask, they would probably be very busy. Business model.
My bad, really. My big bad, because I haven't done it yet. because I've got so many other things going on, and it's like, which thing do you do first?
Yeah, right. You can't fight all these battles and lose the war.
That's right. We had other speakers, we had famous speakers that came, and we had hotel rooms set up for and everything, and we stayed the first night, and the Marriott Hotel, no, not Marriott, the Hyatt Hotel that we were all booked in, basically booted us all because some of us refused to wear masks through the lobby. And so we had to rebook at, it turns out, a much better rate with Marriott, which was really fantastic. But we went through that whole rigmarole, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing, is that, yes, we do have a case against them because, you know, you don't get, you can do that. The law does provide for you to do that, just like, well, I mean, that it's a law of nature that applies here,
right,
that allows you to do something. So in other words, you could put a bullet in my head, but there's actually, you know, penalties for doing so.
Right.
You know,
listen, I got somebody came into the, I let you go on because nobody was in there. So somebody's in there, and I don't want to go to the end without answering since we went this long. So I'm going to cut you off because
no, that's all right.
In the idea, I'm just waiting for somebody to come in. I was going to go till midnight otherwise. But anyway. Okay. Well, we won't have no trouble with you.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, peace out.
Yeah.
All right, y'all.
Okay, Jeff from PA.
I just had a comment. Not to criticize, but that last caller seemed to consume most of our discussion tonight, and seems like she was talking in circles, and that really doesn't get us very far. Seemed like she contradicts herself a lot.
Well, you look at, I was trying to get around to a discussion, and there was nobody in the queue, because if there was somebody else in the queue, I wouldn't have let the conversation go as long as it did. But either that, or I had to shut down early. If nobody shows an interest to come in, and you could have come in and rescued me at any time.
Yeah, you were very patient with her, and that took a lot.
Well, look at, it was a discussion, and there was some good stuff that came out of it, you know, I'm sure. But I didn't take anybody else's time up because I was waiting for them to come. I guess I could have said, there's nobody in the queue. That's what I should have announced. But,
sum it all up, I'm optimistic that something good will come out of this in the end. But I understand their intentions. It's about the people. But I understand where you're coming from, too, where when we have a president, which I'm referring to Donald Trump, that is acting in a constitutional manner, sometimes we have to let him do what he does best.
Well, look, we do bequeath a certain authority. The government is only an authority by consent of the people, as long as they're operating in good behavior. That authority goes away the minute they violate your rights. So there is a stopgap to it. I mean, he doesn't have, you know, dictatorial rights. But if he's defending the Constitution and he's using the military, there is an end to that. But there also, I think, is when you have a foreign agent on your soil that is subverting the government, you look at whatever we got to do to throw them off, we can do from wherever, I think.
No, agreed. Agreed. He was the last man standing when the other two branches did not want to do their part.
And he allowed them every opportunity to do their part. He never jumped the gun, and he ran the clock out knowing exactly what he was doing. You know, and then signing the Insurrection Act at the last hour because the State Department or whatever was supposed to give the report if there was any foreign interference in the election, didn't handed it in 30 days late and gave him one day to read that report and decide what to do.
Yeah, and I don't agree on that notion that if we're restored either through him or the military action that they repossess the Constitution and the our inalienable rights from us to themselves. No, because they all swear an oath to uphold the Constitution.
Well, the point that's well taken with her is nobody knows the Constitution out there, even in government. So it's a problem. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. I mean, look, Trump has been a good, quick learn. I mean, he didn't know everything when he went in there. He also didn't know how deep and horrible this whole thing was until after he was there, you know? So we have a problem because we need to be educated. That's the problem. You know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to run this thing with, you know, two or three people that know what's supposed to happen, you know, and everybody else being clueless.
This whole thing over the last year, I believe, is a wake-up. People got to just see, learn by example, you know, instead of just by word or by being taught, book learned or just formally taught. They have to learn by living it and not one to repeat it.
They've all but got us beat right now. It's very close. And this whole business of a bunch of people dying is going to be another situation where we're at risk because they're going to figure we're weak, you know?
Yeah.
If we're going to lose, and it's not just in America, it's going to be over a third of the world's population, over a third, maybe more, if they get their wish. And that's going to change the face of everything. Everything. I mean, how do you put all these middle class businesses that went out of business, and then you got all this death going on? That's never going to come back. I don't understand how it could even begin to, you know.
It's going to have to just be organic all over again, Stone Age.
Yeah, we're going to go back to villages. We're going to go back to the medieval days where we had the shoemaker and the blacksmith and everybody in a square, basically.
Round zero.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be pretty, I don't think. I don't know. You know, we were hoping for a soft landing with the economic thing. Well, something has to happen pretty quickly because people are going broke today. It's not tomorrow. Everybody's already doesn't have any money anymore, you know?
Well, I don't know if you follow Mike Lindell at all, but I've seen him in a lot of his videos.
Yeah.
And him and Steve Bannon about August. I don't know if that's a significance or, you know.
Well, August is supposedly the target day for Trump to be reinstated.
But I've heard the word inauguration slip from Steve Bannon's mouth, but he kind of caught himself in the middle of it and stopped.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll see. I don't see how we could go much longer. I mean, it's so screwed up. Even just fixing it without anything else is going to take time. You know what I mean?
If
we all agreed to go back to constitutional government and everything like we were talking, like the last caller said, draining the swamp is about impossible if you think about it, you know?
Oh, well.
Because you'll have nobody to do the work. They're all culpable, every one of them, from the top to the bottom. So you're gonna pull that plug out, and you're gonna have a big sucking noise, and then what do you got? You got nothing.
Yep.
You know, so that's scary, and we got to figure that out. But we're like down to the wire. So look, it was a good discussion. Thank you for coming on, and we'll see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat station. Thank you. God bless. And I'll still say, keep your powder dry.